our relationship with the very complex global food system that really brings us from the farms to the table, and something, a Food for Thought event series. So we'll be in talking about that.
Yeah, he's going to tell us all about it. I'm really looking forward to it. They've already had some great events.
Why are you looking at me? I'm explaining what Greg does.
I know, it's just taking you a long time.
Oh, Greg was interested.
All right.
Let's see if you can pronounce this right.
I get the publication, so I know how to say Sevier. So
it's not Sevier, it's Sevour.
I think that depends.
No,
you say tomato, I say tomato.
If you go online and look at their film, it's Sevour.
No. Anyway, so any foodie worth their salt?
Mm-mm.
What was that?
Seville.
Seville. Okay.
Oh, Seville.
Seville.
I didn't know you had to pronounce it with a French accent from my Israeli friend.
Okay.
All right.
Do you just want to do this?
Just talk.
Okay.
Really.
Sevier Magazine. Many people in the food world know it. It is a well-read and much-loved publication, and they are out with a cookbook. Betsy Andrews, the executive editor, is going to be on the phone with us later in the show talking about the book, The New Classics. And does your life need a little bit of spice?
Not mine. Mine's got plenty.
Mine can always use a little bit more.
Thanks.
But anyway, 2941's restaurant is doing
I'm sitting right here, you know.
So what?
Okay.
Okay. Are you offended?
No, your life
so
doesn't need
easy.
Any more spice.
You don't know what my life needs. Anyway, the second annual 8-course spice dinner is coming up. It's this evening. Are you going? You should be. Because we have in with us the restaurant sommelier and beverage director, Jonathan Schuler, who is... Oh, Skylar. Sorry. Did I pronounce it wrong?
You did.
I did. Skylar, sorry. And he's going to tell us all about it, but they brought with them their guest chef, and he's been in before, the Spice King himself, Lior. And I'm not even going to try your name because I will
Lior
screw it up.
Lior Lev Sercars, right?
Good job.
There we
Thank
go.
You.
Anyway, we can't wait to talk.
And it's here phonetically for you, too.
I know, but
That's
I didn't want
That's called a Nickyism.
I just didn't want to screw it up.
All right. Jonathan, your last name is Skylar, in case you were wondering.
I said Skylar.
All right. So, and let's talk about Mezcal, shall we? I wrote this, like a beautiful woman, so tempting and delicious, and yes, my friends, also so dangerous.
Oh, my God. That
Especially
so
around
stupid.
The time of La Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, which is Mexico's annual holiday in remembrance of those who have passed on, or have they? You drink a little mezcal, you'll talk to them. Nikolai Koenig is in here with, I got to get this right, Mick Udi, right?
That's correct.
I did it right. Mick Udi from El Chucho, and we're going to be talking about El Bujo.
El Bujo Mezcal.
El Bujo Mezcal. So, first of all, what does the name mean?
El Bujo means the owl, but it sort of generally means the owl, but specifically pertains to the horned owl. They got a lot of those in Oaxaca.
Because you get horned when you drink mezcal?
You know, you get horned in a lot of other things.
Yeah, okay.
Set and setting.
That
you
sounds
know?
Painful.
Yeah.
All right. So... you know, some people might not know. We've had folks on the show who've told us, but do it again. Why is mezcal different from tequila?
The primary differences are tequila, by law, is only made from Weber Blue Agave, and it comes from the state of Jalisco, which is in the north of Mexico up in the mountains. One way of looking at it is all tequila is mezcal, not all mezcal is tequila.
Is that like A equals C and B equals C? Does A equal B?
Wait, what?
Plus D squared.
Yes.
Yeah. And 3 to an exponent.
Okay, so 20. Why is that the case? So explain, like, what are the components?
So tequila is only made from the Weber Blue Agave. There are lots of agaves, though. And El Bujo, and in general, a lot of the mezcal as a general category comes from the state of Oaxaca, which is in the south.
Mm-hmm.
Way down in the south, so a few thousand miles or so from Tequila, the Tequila region.
Okay.
It's a lot more handcrafted. It's a lot more small production. It's made by mostly by families in small batches in their family little distillery. Whereas tequila, a lot of it's a lot more mechanized. It's a much bigger industry.
More mass produced.
So
more masters, there are some great artisanal tequilas. This isn't about one being, you know, better than the other. They're just significant differences.
Sounds like you're throwing down the gauntlet, Nikolai. I have to be honest.
You know, I try to avoid being combative. But, you know, if you need me to take off the gauntlet. Okay.
Take that, Padron. So you've got a bunch of stuff in front of you. What are we trying first?
So we're going to sample a taste of some concoctions we can come up with. We're going to talk about some things that we can come up with. Mick is here from El Chucho, which is a great restaurant up in Columbia Heights on 11th Street. If you haven't been there, you got to check it out. Great tacos, great menu, obviously great cocktails.
We could have used
Mick
some
is the
tacos
bar manager.
Morning,
He's going to give us the breakdown
yeah,
on.
Thanks, Mick.
he He's going to show us a great feature cocktail he's doing for Day of the Dead. We're going to do it up over there with some special drinks. It's going to be a lot of fun this
cool.
week.
Well, while you guys are mixing things up, we're gonna get highbrow here. We're going to talk to Greg Magruder from National Geographic. You've got these cool new programs. Why don't we start with you? How did you get to do what you do? How did you end up at Nat Geo doing these program development things?
Oh, my. That's a long story.
But, we only have 10 minutes.
But I would tell you that I've been working with public programs at National Geographic since 1989.
Okay.
And happy to...
You don't look a day over 10. How did that happen?
Well, you're not looking at the gray hair. A lot of gray hair there. And that's gray hair caused by fun.
Okay, good.
So, but I'm overseeing the museum and also our live public programs, lectures, concerts, tastings that we do not only here at headquarters in Washington, D.C., but around the world as well.
Nice.
But specifically for food, we decided that with National Geographic's organization-wide focus on food, mm-hmm. that it was an opportunity for us to do some public programs that gave people a chance to have a personal experience with food. So hence the exhibition that opened a couple of weeks ago, and that'll be running through February. And there's a test kitchen in that exhibition. You get a chance to see things like what famous people might eat for breakfast, what Michael Phelps eats for breakfast. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nothing.
I know
like
what he smokes for dinner.
Well, we know that.
Aw, at least that
was
Phelps
left
alone.
Off the menu. you also get to visit the dining rooms of some of the famous people from history. Mm-hmm. Livia Drusilla, Julius Caesar's wife. You can go into her dining room. You can go into Jane Austen's dining room. And Kublai Khan's dining room.
Cool.
We've got all these creations. So it's looking at every aspect of food.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, Nat Geo Live, our lecture program, is doing a series of programs. We did a lecture earlier this week, a talk earlier this week, panel discussion on an evening with top chefs.
Mm-hmm.
We had Rock Harper.
Barton Seaver.
Barton Seaver, moderator. And Barton is National Geographic's food fellow.
Right.
I don't know many organizations that have a food fellow that, mm-hmm. you know, we don't do food all the time.
He is our nice fellow. He's been here many times.
Yes, a very nice fellow. So Rock Harper was on that panel along
Good
with
guy
Ann
too.
Cash.
So,
or,
Jamie Leeds.
No, Jamie Leeds was on that panel mm-hmm. as well. This week we've got a photographer doing a talk, Jim Richardson. Farm to Table is his talk. It's tracing, looking at food and how it's raised around the world. Jim mm-hmm. is one of National Geographic's top photographers.
So will you get into sort of the hardcore issues like there's this whole question of is there a global food crisis or not? Do we actually grow and create and birth enough food to feed everybody on the earth, including those folks now?
We are getting into that with our magazine articles. There is a blog as well, natgeofood.com.
What's the answer? Is there or isn't there?
Well,
we feed everybody?
Well, yeah, we can feed everyone. It means that you've got to use interesting and cutting-edge techniques, but it is possible. Having been an ag major in college for mm-hmm. a hot second, it's something that's very interesting to me as well to look at. And so much of it is about how you raise and about distribution.
Well, I'm sort of curious, as you were putting this program together, how did you sort of, I mean, this is such an enormous issue and it's so hot right now. How did you pick the pieces that you wanted to focus on for both the exhibit and for the public discussions?
Well, the exhibition comes to us from the American Museum of Natural History.
Okay.
So we looked at that exhibition. We thought it was great, and it mm-hmm. was going to be touring after it was presented in New York City
mm-hmm.
and decided that dovetailed with everything that we were doing across National Geographic.
Okay.
We looked at that, looked at everything else that we were doing with our lecture programs and NG Live, and decided there were a number of opportunities to reflect the whole issue of food. I mean, for instance, one thing we're doing every year, how many of you know about National Geography Week? Did you know such a thing existed?
No.
I think I flunked it.
Well, it does.
Okay. Tell us, Greg.
National Geography Week, November 14th, second week of November. What we're doing in conjunction with that is doing a cheese, beer, and wine tasting to celebrate National Geography Week. So we've got
any excuse for beer.
Well, you know, any excuse for beer. But the thing is, all of these elements, these foods, have a very direct connection with geography. You know, the taste is informed by where you select the food. The taste of the beer is informed by where the hops are from, where the ingredients.
right,
exactly. But for this event, we're doing next week, or in early November, we've got Garrett Oliver, who is a James Beard Award winner. We've got Steve Jenkins. Steve is probably the food cheese expert in the world. And then we also have Josh Wesson, who is a wine expert. You may know Josh. He used to have a series of restaurants here in Washington, or wine stores here in Washington, D.C.
Oh, wait.
No.
Well, whatever. No, that's not the same Josh. Never mind. Okay. Wrong Josh.
Yeah. But, you know, and one thing Steve is doing specifically, he's doing stinky cheeses. Mm-hmm. So for those people who are less hardy, you don't want to show up.
Okay.
It's going to be a very aromatic evening. And so what we're going to do is use the cheese as the keystone, pair it with various foods.
We should go.
With beer and wine. There'll be two seats.
Well, I was going to say, we're immune because once we picked up our son Sam from camp about 10 years ago, nothing could smell as bad as his feet. So.
Okay, that's
But National Geographic Television is doing a six-part series.
You know, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
We're
going
to come back to you, okay? But we'll have more time with you.
Well, I stopped the show with that Sam comment.
If it's a dumb comment. Okay, this is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
The 14th Annual March of Dimes Heroines of Washington Gala will honor women who exemplify leadership and are making a difference in our community. From CEOs to rising stars, this year's finalists will be recognized for their significant volunteer contributions at a Black Tie Awards presentation on Tuesday, November 18th at the Ritz-Carlton Tyson's Corner. All proceeds from Heroines of Washington will benefit the March of Dimes mission to give all babies a healthy start in life. Since 2001, the event has given awards to 80 heroines and has raised more than $1.7 million to support the March of Dimes effort to help women have full-term, healthy pregnancies and healthy babies. To learn more about the March of Dimes, to purchase tickets to Heroines of Washington, and make a donation, visit marchofdimes.org/heroines. Join them in celebrating these inspiring women who go above and beyond to improve our community.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Hey, everybody. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis and Greg Magruder, who's the VP of Public Programs at National Geographic. And, Greg, we're at that moment in the show where we need to make sure everybody knows how to find and where to find and what the dates are, all of that, for these two programs.
Okay, here we are. So to find out about events that are taking place here in Washington, you can go to natgeoevents.org.
Okay, great.
And the exhibition will be running through February, those public programs running through the end of the year.
And so let's highlight some of these public programs that you're doing that people can go to. We just talked about the stinky cheese one, which sounds fantastic. But what else is coming up that we should know about?
Well, in the museum, we do have a test kitchen in
the exhibition.
You
mentioned that. So who's cooking in it?
So we hired someone. This was a woman who was working in her visitor services staff, and she loves food. And so she'll be doing testing of various recipes, and all the food for that has been provided by our supporter Whole Foods. And so she'll be cooking, doing demonstrations daily.
And what are her demos based on? Is it just, like, where does she get her ideas from?
She makes them up.
She's just having creative. A good time? Okay.
This week it was all apples.
All right.
So it was all apple-based dishes. So it will be focusing on one item.
Each week.
Kind of spinning off from there.
Well, that's very cool. All right, great. Well, we will...
Well, what? Where do we go online to get all this information?
Again, you can go online natgeoevents.org.
Okay, okay, great.
Awesome. And also remember to watch the television program that airs later on.
Okay, great. Okay. Thanks so much.
Well,
thank you.
All right. Well, let's go back to Nikolai and Mick and talk about El Buho. What's the connection between the Day of the Dead celebration and Mezcal? Is it because you see dead people? I mean,
well, enough of it, you can see a lot of those. But no, in Mexico, Day of the Dead is it's a celebration, but there's some somber aspects to it. As you mentioned, it's a day of remembrance. It's actually a couple of days. There's Halloween or All Hallows Eve. And then on Day of the Dead, the community gets together. People will visit the graves of their family members. El Buho is made by a family on a small family distillery, and they're the Jimenez family. They've been in mezcal production for over five generations. But we're talking about very down-to-earth people, you know, who've been doing, been living this lifestyle for generations, and so religion is very much a part of their culture. The village comes together to have a little celebration in the Zocalo or the town square. There'll be like a battle of the bands, different events. A lot of it's organized by the church, so the religion and the life and the culture is all kind of mixed together in these small village communities. Mezcal is very important to what they do down there. They really live with and by the mezcal that they produce.
And what is the taste profile?
So I'm going to pass this around, actually.
Okay.
So mezcal, in the traditional production method that the Jimenez family uses, they harvest the agaves when they're anywhere between 8 to 10 years old. This is 100% Espadín agave.
Okay.
So this is a particular agave that grows nice and fat.
Woof.
Oh, my God.
The Mexican-Spanish term is maguey for the Espadín. So they harvest the Espadín. They chop off the big outer leaves. And by the way, it's not a cactus. A lot of people think it's a kind of cactus. It's not. It's a succulent plant, sort of like an aloe.
Okay.
So they chop off the leaves. They chop up the piñas, which are the hearts of the plant, and they throw them on a big coal pit. And they use a type of, the Jimenez family use a type of wood, encino, which is a Mexican oak. And they make this big coal pit, and then they stack up the chopped up hearts of the agave plant, and they cover it with burlap tarps and throw dirt and rocks and whatever's at hand. They just bury this stack of agave piñas for 5 or 6 days. It's basically taking a week-long smoke bath.
Which is why it's so smoky.
That's where you get the smoke from.
I mean, when you sniff it, when you just smell it, I mean, that smoke goes right back to your throat without even tasting it. It's unbelievable.
And this is actually a lot less smoky El Buho than a lot of the mezcals you'll find on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that the Jimenez family did intentionally for this expression. A lot of them are even heavier. But this is meant to be fairly moderate, you know, middle of traditional. Traditional smokiness, but approachable and good in cocktails, as we're going to see a little later in the show.
Okay, great. All right, we will follow up with you guys in a little bit.
So let's say hi to Betsy Andrews. Hi, Betsy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Thanks for joining us this morning.
Betsy is Savour's acting editor-in-chief, and she's here.
I'm the executive editor.
Executive editor. Sorry.
Which is what I said earlier.
Okay, whatever. This is amateur radio. So Savour has a great new cookbook out called The New Classics Cookbook. We also have a friend of yours in the studio. You want to say hi, Lior?
Hi, Betsy. It's Lior.
Hi, Lior.
Well, we got everybody
on
the
show. We just wanted to shock you a little bit this morning, Betsy. So, as a longtime reader and subscriber to the magazine, it was really exciting to see this book come together, Betsy, the New Classics Cookbook. Talk a little bit about how you all put this together, because it's an enormous tome of recipes.
It is. It represents 20 years of recipes for Sever. This was our 20th anniversary this year. Mm-hmm. And what we did was collect every single recipe from the archives of Sever. We ended up with over 7,000 recipes. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we had to figure out how we could hone that into a book. So what we did was go through every single one of those 7,000 recipes and ask ourselves, which of these are really the classics? And what is a classic? A classic is a recipe that exemplifies a particular cuisine and culture. It speaks to the history and geography of the place it's from. It tells an essential story about people and their relationship to food. And it's also a dish that stands the test of time. It's the most beloved dish, you know, the ones that we can't stop thinking about and that we think are so delicious. In New Orleans, you know, crawfish etouffee or Chinese red cooked pork or pad thai or salad niçoise. And we ended up with about 1,100 recipes in the book.
Well, but did you also sort of take a look at it from the mission of the magazine as how you interpret these recipes? Because the Sevier is really different in its take on food, and it's brought mm-hmm. a lot of interesting cuisines to the table long way before other people were sort of talking about them. I mean, you've always been sort of on the forefront of what's going on in food trends.
That's right. So the recipes themselves were collected in our travels. Mm-hmm. The travels of the editors and the writers. And we have gone all over the world and, you know, been in kitchens of, you know, famous chefs and many, many home cooks and, you know, street vendors. And we are cooking with people and collecting their recipes. And we are absolutely omnivorous and peripatetic and hungry always for new things. So, yes, you get the sort of a classic like a pasta primavera, you know, that you know, comes from a famous New York restaurant, you mm-hmm. know. But then you also get things like the Trinidadian griddle cake called Bus Up and Shut, or, you know.
Not something everybody knows. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
It's not in my usual repertoire of cooking.
Right.
Well, but what's interesting about this is the old classic was maybe the Betty Crocker cookbook from, you know, 50 years ago. And
I think that all depends on how old you are.
I'm old enough, but you know, the magazine and the world is so much smaller and so much more global. So it was just interesting because there's New England clam chowder in there, and there's, you know, Hunanese homestyle tofu. And but my question is for people maybe in New York and L.A. and Chicago, the big cities, some of these dishes are, oh, yeah, I've had that. How is this going to play out in Peoria where some of these foods are still very foreign?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in the magazine, we've always helped people by including a pantry section that gives you a source for the ingredients that you're using in the recipes. With the book, we decided not to do that because for exactly the reason that you're talking about, you know, we're so connected now and we're connected through the internet. So it's very easy to source ingredients now, not necessarily in stores, you know, down your block, but certainly online. And so, you know, it's much easier for the person in Peoria to make something like, you know, an Argentinian, you know, paprika laden meat and hominy stew called locro, or, you know, a delicious, braised, you know, cabbage from someplace else. I mean, it's become for all of us much easier to access these foods. The other thing I think that's interesting about this is the importance of immigration and, you know, immigrant restaurateurs across the country. I mean, not only in New York and L.A., the sort of big urban centers, but also in small towns across the Midwest, you know, people who came maybe to farm at first, you know, and then opened restaurants. And so you find people cooking, you know, Thai food or some sort of South American food, you know, all over the country.
Well, that sort of leads up to my next question. Given the access and availability of food and the growth of knowledge that people have today about food, it's changed so drastically in the last 20 years. How does the magazine's viewpoint match that now?
Well, you know, the magazine continues to be a place where, you know, you will find things that dishes and cultures that other people aren't particularly looking at, mm-hmm. you know. However, we also are very interested in, new food movements. And I think you're going to see more and more of that in Sevier, the young chefs and new producers doing really exciting things. And I feel that Sevier is a magazine that has really inspired, an entire generation of people who are really interested in food and are interested in eating locally and also interested in culinary travel. So I think we're going to continue with that mission, and we'll continue to be a place that you can go to find something new that you haven't yet, you haven't yet experienced and haven't yet eaten.
Well, we've got a couple of minutes before we have to take a break. Let's talk about the pantry section, because with Lior here, when I grew up, and my wife's right, it was basically salt and pepper. That was it. Mm-hmm. And now you've got all these spices and from my favorite turmeric to many others. How does that play into, how did that play into all of these recipes and into the whole pantry section?
Right. Well, every single time that we report a story and bring back, recipes, we learn about a new ingredient. And so our pantry at Sevier is constantly turning over with new spices and new herbs and new fresh produce, new pickles, all sorts of fantastic things that we like to tell our readers about, so that you can, you taste something new and then make a new dish out of it. And there are certain things that are staples of my own kitchen and our kitchen at Sevier. But then there are these, very interesting one-off things that you really can't make the recipe without, and it's a wonderful thing to learn about them.
All right, well, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we want to talk about some more of the recipes in the book and some of the interesting ones that we sort of noticed while we were going through it. So do you mind holding on for just a moment?
Of course.
Okay, great. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Every day, I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day, I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6 I make his breakfast. At 7 I shower. Every day I wake up.
For those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Come to the National Academy of Public Administration annual meeting Thursday, November 13th at the DoubleTree in Crystal City. This year's event, Public Administration 2025, How Will Government Adapt?, brings together federal, state, local, and international leaders to discuss and find solutions to the greatest challenges facing our nation's governments. The event features an impressive array of speakers from across government, including OPM Director Catherine Archuleta, OMB Controller Dave Mader, and officials from executive and legislative branch agencies. For more information or to register, visit napawash.org.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Green light. Hey, girl. School zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody. We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to Betsy Andrews. She's the executive editor at Sevier, and they have a new cookbook out called the New Classics Cookbook, and we are digging into it. You had a question about the cocktail section.
Oh, well, we can get into the cocktail section. Yeah. I thought you wanted to know about how she culled.
Well, yeah, actually, we were talking during the break, Betsy. You culled 7,000 recipes down to 1,100, and then did you make every one of them to make sure they were delicious?
All by yourself, Betsy? Did you do it all by yourself?
Do you need help next time?
No, Yeah, so we retested a lot of these recipes because some of them were quite old. And actually, you know, our recipe style, even you know, sort of the way that we write the recipes, has changed a little over the years. But we're cooking constantly in the kitchen, and many of these recipes we knew very well and have all eaten. We are testing recipes and tasting food all day long at Sevier. So a lot of this was familiar.
That sounds like a hard job. It's dirty work, but somebody's got to do it, right?
Yeah.
Terrible.
Were there any recipes that sort of came on the table that people were like, no, this has to be in, and you were like, no, it doesn't? Or, I mean, did anybody get into arguments over certain recipes?
No, actually. We sort of came to an agreement about almost all of it. It took a long time for us to hone the list, but mm-hmm. I think we all have interestingly enough, we all have a consistent idea of what a classic is. You know,
all right.
That dish we can't stop thinking about.
Let me ask you about the cocktail section, because most cookbooks don't have cocktail sections.
Well, more and more do these days.
Perhaps
actually.
They do, but it's still unusual. So, did you make all the drinks and try them too?
No, that's not the question.
That's a good question.
It's not a good question.
I think it's a good question.
It's a ridiculous question. The question is:
are you married, Betsy? Because
the question is really about the growth of the cocktail scene and.
Yeah.
How did you guys go about putting together? I mean, there's so much going on in the cocktail world. I mean, clearly we're doing it in studio today. How did you go about figuring out the classic cocktails and why put it in there at this point?
Well, it's as much a part of a meal as anything else,
mm-hmm.
you know. Drink is a very important part of food for us. We think of it as food. We think of it as delicious. So that's why it's just integral to the whole notion of cuisine. So, you know, in this book there are both the classic cocktails that you will find really in many places where you talk about classic cocktails and you're talking about, you know, something like a daiquiri or, you know, the tiki drinks like a zombie
mm-hmm.
or a gin and tonic. But then we also actually added a few new drinks that we decided are so good that they should be classics, and we're going to name them as classics, something
mm-hmm.
like the La La Lola.
I was just looking at that one.
Yeah, and that was created by a very talented bartender in New York named Jill Schuster,
mm-hmm.
and it's a sort of a boozy version of a cherry Coke.
Mm-hmm.
It has cola and rye whiskey, cherries, lemon juice, and then you do this really cute little technique where you make cola-flavored ice cubes, and the reason you use cola in your ice cubes is that if you use regular water ice cubes, it would actually dilute the
right.
The sort of, you know, cherry Coke flavor of the drink.
Well, I'm going to admit that Nikki's question was better than mine.
Yes,
but,
it was.
But I still would have loved to be there when you were testing out the cocktails.
Okay.
Betsy, thanks for being on the show. I want to make sure everybody knows how to find Sevier's new classics cookbook. Where
sure,
do we find it?
You can find it on Amazon.
All right, there you
That's
go. Well,
good
thank
thing.
You. Thanks.
Thanks. Leora,
thank
do you want to say bye-bye to Betsy?
Bye, Betsy. We'll
okay.
see you in New York.
Bye, Leora.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, Nikolai, we're going to throw it back to you.
Back.
So we were getting, this history of mezcal. And tell us more. So you poured us a little bit here, but how do you use the mezcal correctly in a cocktail so that it doesn't, so that you still feel the taste and taste the liquor?
There
do you
couple,
know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a couple really basic things you can do.
Okay.
It actually mixes really well with ginger beer. Get yourself a good quality ginger beer.
Mm-hmm.
Barrett's or Fever Tree makes a nice ginger beer, whatever your preference, and just put a splash of that with it on the rocks. We also try to encourage people to look at mezcal as food. So it's something that, especially El Buho, it's something that can be sipped by itself.
I had it for breakfast yesterday.
You know, you really can look at it as something that
so
can go
like
on the rocks.
On the rocks
and,
or
on
straight
the rocks
up?
And actually appeals to a lot of the Freud drinkers. We get that comparison a lot, the smokiness of
mm-hmm.
El Buho. Something about it, very reminiscent of the peaty Isla Scotch thing. So it appeals to a whiskey drinker who likes scotch on the rocks, but absolutely great with grapefruit juice as well. I like to throw it on the rocks with some fresh squeezed grapefruit juice
mm-hmm.
and put some kosher salt on it. I call it a salty bird.
Okay.
Like kind of a riff on the Greyhound with salt, which is a salty dog.
Well, let me ask Mick Udi
a
question.
Yeah, Mick will tell you more about the
When you're at El Chucho, when people come in and they order mezcal, are they knowledgeable yet, or do they just say, give us a shooter, we don't know what we're drinking?
I think it's important that when you're selling mezcal to people to make sure their palate is going to be
going to work with it.
And because, yeah, I mean, the smokiness and the mineralness that comes out in mezcal is not going to appeal to everyone. But for those that like it, you can do a lot of really cool things with it. You can sell them cocktails like we do a blood and smoke, which is basically a mezcal margarita with a blood orange habanero syrup that we make in-house.
That sounds yummy.
Yeah, and I have a take on...
Does that light them up like Times Square? My God.
It's very popular amongst the folks that have been drinking it. And
who are walking home.
They do all right. They do
all
right.
You're in a neighborhood, so that makes sense. And there's Uber.
So absolutely.
That's why God invented Uber.
So right? Tell us what you're making today.
Well, I have two cocktails we're going to be making. Mm-hmm. That we're doing for featuring for Day of the Dead and Halloween. So we'll be doing it all next week. The first one is actually our hot drink, which we'll be running most of the winter. We start off with apple cider. Mm-hmm. And our take, we throw in some pomegranate juice as well. And then we mull the cider out. I decided that I wanted to do a bit of an infusion. Mm-hmm. And I have... the ingredients for the infusion right here.
Okay. You have to stand in front of the mic, though, while you tell us.
It's radio.
Right. We can hear you, but they can't hear you.
You're not talking to us over the bar.
Fair enough. I've got vanilla, bitter orange, and Mexican cinnamon in here. Let me pass it around, I guess.
Did you know the Spice King was here? I mean, he's going to, like...
His Majesty the Spice King.
I did not. But we leave it in there in the mezcal for about a week, and... Mm-hmm. Then we strain it out, and it actually adds a whole lot of layers to the cider and everything else. So what I'll do is I'll give the cider around.
Okay, great.
We got it hot here.
All right. While you're doing that, we're going to switch over and talk to His Majesty, the Spice King. Actually,
Jonathan
Schuyler and...
You need to get in front of a mic,
yep.
too.
Yeah.
And Lior Lev Sarkars, our returning guests. These are you're not quite Steve Martin on this show, but you've been on a lot.
He's been on one other time.
No, we're you on twice?
No.
This is the second time.
Well, it seems like twice.
Yeah, when do I get the jacket, though?
That's coming. You get it on Amazon.
There you go. Thank you.
But there's a huge Spice dinner coming up at 2941.
Tonight.
And are there still... tickets available? Is it possible to get in?
Jonathan?
Oh, it's sold out.
You can always call and ask.
So we're telling you about something you can't attend.
You could show at the
door.
But
you can
maybe
hear about what you're going to miss, right, Jonathan?
Yeah, because this is something new. I mean, 10 years ago, restaurants weren't doing spice dinners. What was the impetus for this in the first place?
Well, you know, Bertrand and I worked for Daniel Boulud many years ago and kept
You're such a name dropper.
You are.
Yeah, you know.
So wait, that's Bertrand. Bertrand Chamel, who is the chef.
Yeah, the executive chef over 2941.
And Danny Ballude, who's
Daniel
restaurant
Ballude,
we just
young,
last
talented
night.
Chef,
yes.
You know, promising up-and-coming restaurant.
Up-and-comer, yes, yeah. I agree.
We worked together for Daniel and kept this friendship over the years. Once I started blending spices, it was Bertrand called me up right away and started using the spices here at 2941. And it's something that we've been doing more and more with chefs like Bertrand and across the country with bartenders that we work with, chocolate makers, beer brewers, ice cream makers. We want to show people how fascinating spices are, mm-hmm. and that it shouldn't be reserved just for your apple pie once a year or your pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving. They could be used year-round, and there's more than clove, nutmeg, and vanilla to your pantry.
Wait, what? What did you say?
Yeah. And... Bertrand actually called me last year and he said, would you come and do a dinner with us? And I was more than excited, you know, because we make the blends, yet we don't often see the end result. And what talented people like Bertrand and Jonathan and the bar program at 2941. And I'm always fascinated to discover the great things that they do. And what was even more exciting is to see the reaction of, you know, clients, 2941, being able in less than a week or 10 days, getting enough people to fill the dining room and sell it out for one night to mm-hmm. do an 8-course dinner that's each blend is a dish basically, and we highlight these great ingredients. And from the cocktails that the team created for tonight and the 8 dishes that Bertrand, his pastry chef, made, and really honoring each and every blend in a great way.
Well,
I want to go to Jonathan.
Yeah, here's my question for you right off the bat. Are you using spices in the drinks too?
We're using spices in the drinks.
I was going to say, between, you know, the way Lior coordinates with Bertrand in the kitchen, and then you have to pick the pairings, and then you've got to, you know, meld the spices. Like, how much in advance do you guys have to work to make sure everything's going to taste right and taste, I don't know, simpatico?
Well, so what I would say is that it's Chef likes Lior spices quite a bit, and so I do too. And so they show up on tasting menu quite a lot. And so the spices themselves are not that new to work with for me.
We work with them
all the time, and so we have wines. Literally, we have wines on our list specifically for spice blends that he has for when Chef brings them into the menu, which is wonderful. And then we use them at the bar as well. So we always have one or two of the cocktails. Actually, everything that we've done for this dinner is original. It's new. So we got the whole bar program came together and everyone created drinks themselves.
And what were some of the spice mixtures that were really, that popped for you, that you were like, oh, I really want to do something good with this?
So what we're going to be doing today in studio is one of my favorites, which is the Galil. Mm-hmm. Right. Which has this beautiful sort of minty.
I think Lior likes it.
I'm from the Galilee. If we could do a cocktail in Virginia with a blend named Galil, then I think I can retire, you know.
Sorry, go ahead.
So there's this beautiful sort of minty freshness about it. I think it does a wonderful job of right this time of year. Mm-hmm. Of the way that the herbs mix is having still some of that sort of fresh, clean flavor that you get out of summer and into early fall when you get things like pears and apples coming in, mm-hmm. But starting to see some of those piney notes that really, to me, are very reminiscent of winter.
Okay.
And so it's wonderful for sort of, on one level, doing things, cocktails. We're doing this with pear, tequila, and chartreuse, and Antonia can tell you more about that later. And then for things like wine, it does beautifully with things like Alsace grape varietals,
okay.
Where you have these kind of really clean, generally German grapes, mm-hmm. with a much more sort of savory French edge to the winemaking.
Mm, my goodness, that's beautiful. All right, we have to take a quick break.
Like,
but when we come back, we're going to find out more about how you guys played with the spices, what it'll look like on the menu, and both the beverage and the dinner. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
We all face challenges, but when you're a child in need, facing those challenges can feel like moving a mountain.
That's why WTOP has helped create a place for the kids.
Join us as we support the Butler Wyatt Clubhouse No. 2.
Since 1937, the Butler Wyatt Clubhouse has provided a safe place where kids in our area can learn, explore, and grow.
Visit aplaceforthekids.com or the charity section at WTOP.com to learn about ways that you can help.
Together,
we can move mountains.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Danger Zone. New, tough, direct, uncompromising. Saturday morning, 7 a.m., 1500 on your AM dial. Insider information on the trouble spots of the emerging world. India, Egypt, Morocco, and their crowded regions. From retired U.S. Marine Special Forces Operator Colonel Bill Cowan and me, retired U.S. Ambassador Dick Carlson. Nothing else like it on radio or TV. Danger Zone, Saturday morning, 7 a.m. on 1500 a.m.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking about the spice dinner tonight at 2941. Before we get back to that, I want to quickly thank the folks that support the show and make it possible. Our friends at Georgetown Bagelry, our friends at the Neighborhood Restaurant Group, the Hyatt Regency Chesapeake Bay, a gloriously beautiful resort, The Mandarin Oriental Washington, the American Lamb Board, and the Virginia Wine Board, thanks for supporting the show. Let's get back to talking spices. Now, Antonio Pukenik is a bartender, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
At 2941.
And you're actually mixing some of these drinks, right?
Yes, I am.
So give us a little insight.
What are you mixing today?
What's your favorite?
So the cocktail I'm making today is called Parely Legal.
Mm-hmm.
Little play on words here.
We got it.
Yeah, kind of our style. Okay. 2941. But so basically I was given a list of spices that we'd be using for the dinner, and I just kind of started going through sniffing them.
Mm-hmm.
And I landed on the galil, and I automatically knew I wanted to do tequila and pears. We'd been talking about doing a pear cocktail for the fall, and this just seemed perfect.
Great.
So, yeah.
Well, why don't you get to mixing that? And then, Jonathan, you said you're going to be pouring a bunch of wines tonight.
Right. So we're going to have 9 different wines that are going to be on offer tonight. And we're going to pair up with each course. Mm-hmm. So the I just gave you what is called Brandberg Gewürztraminer, which is a very unusual wine. I knew going into this dinner that we were going to have some version of Gewürztraminer. Mm-hmm. Gewürz is the most kind of perfumed of all grape varietals, and it tends to work really, really nicely. I really like this wine. It's from the Umpqua Valley, which is this cool kind of snaking river in the south of Oregon. And it's Gewürztraminer at its best. Gewürztraminer can be very tropical and very lychee-like.
Mm-hmm.
This is
very
different.
It can be sweet.
Different.
Like sometimes it can be a little sweet.
Yeah, it can be very sweet. And this has a touch of sweetness, which I think will help. But this is much more of that kind of fresh rosewater, really floral flavor.
Mm.
So the spices that we're pairing with are very peppery. And I really love that combination of flowers and pepper. They just sort of heighten and complement each other in a lovely sort of way.
But and while we're tasting that, I want to get back to Lev for a second, because we were talking before the show about some of the medicinal values of these spices that you use. And I mentioned I'm taking turmeric for arthritis, and it works like crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
Kills the inflammation right away.
You know, I think that instead of, there's nothing wrong with going to the pharmacy, but if you could stay in your kitchen, it's always better, you know. So just get a large jar of turmeric, fenugreek, sumac, different types of peppers, black peppers, white peppers, integrate them into your daily preparations from just adding turmeric to your bottle of water that you're taking with you throughout the day, steeping some fenugreek seeds in a French brush.
What is fenugreek? I've never heard of it.
So fenugreek is a plant that grows a lot in Asia, in India mainly. It's one of the main components of every curry, if you will. It's very rich in starch, so it adds a thickening ability to curry powders. You could use the leaves or the seeds. Both are fantastic.
Does it matter if they're fresh, if they're...
You know, rarely would see a fresh fenugreek seed, because we get them into the United States already dry. You could find in some ethnic markets some fresh fenugreek leaves. We use a lot of dried fenugreek leaves also in some of the blends that we do, because we make blends that are inspired by Turkey or Armenia or that part of the world where there's a lot of usage of that. It's fantastic. To tell you, you know, it's anti-inflammatory, it's antioxidant. It's, I like to think of the pro versus the anti. I think that it's good versus...
Yeah, I hate you, peacenecks.
But definitely great for you. And if it adds flavor to your food, why not use it?
Right.
You know, it's a good medicine.
Are you familiar with it?
What?
The fenugreek?
Yes.
Okay.
And you said it wrong.
And
so,
what is it?
So going back to what I said earlier, and you know, the dinner tonight is sold out, but if you want to stop by for a drink at the bar, one of these great spice cocktails might even sneak you a couple of hors d'oeuvres if the chef is in a good mood.
Well, then, Jonathan, we better give out the address and the
web
address, too.
But before we get there, I do want to talk about some of the spice blends that you're featuring.
So we're featuring about 12 different blends, but I think what's interesting, a couple of the interesting blends, we play a lot with food and spice. One of the latest things we've added, and I'll give you some to smell, we call it Bernese. So most people are familiar with Bernese sauce.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Our exercise was to translate into a powder form. You know, if you wanted to dust some Bernese onto a dry ingredient, well, obviously, if you put a sauce on it, it's going to become soggy.
Mm-hmm.
So here the idea was to take a Bernese sauce and make it into a powder that you could sprinkle on something. We talked about both fenugreek and turmeric. We're going to feature
fenugreek.
The Vadouvant blend, which is a sort of a sweet, savory curry blend.
Oh,
that's pretty coarse. It has both turmeric and fenugreek in it, a lot of onions.
You are the spice
great.
King.
But how do you find how do you find the right balance when you're putting these things together?
You know, over the years, it's creating this sort of like a dictionary in my mind of what would work great. It's you entertain. you invite people over.
Right.
I think over the year, you know who is going to work well with who, you know, at home, or at least you hope. So for me, it's an exercise of putting things together and letting them rest on their own for a minute and then coming back and see if they work and then start cooking with them and see how they work. Another blend that David is holding here is...
Guess who's in business with Eric Repair?
I didn't say the name, David. It's called Sel d'Antibes. One of the things that we're trying to put back on the culinary map is gray salt, unfiltered,
why?
Unpurified. It has all the great things. It has these iodine notes to it that are fantastic. You can use it instead of using seafood elements, you know, for people who cannot eat it for some reason. You get that sea notes from it. It's coarse. It's filled with great vitamins and minerals that along the way are being washed throughout the process. And great texture also. So we work a lot on textures tonight. Chef Bertrand is going to use this for tuna crudo, the Sel d'Antibes.
Just to sort of sprinkle.
Sort of sprinkle.
Like a finishing salt.
Yeah, the vadouvant is going to go into a squash soup. We are going into fall season, you know, and squash soup could be so interesting. You know, it doesn't need to be that boring.
I hate to do this. We got to wrap up. Jonathan, quickly, the address and the web address.
So it's 2941 Restaurant at 2941 Fairview Park Drive, and that's 2941.com.
All right.
Thank you so much for coming in and doing all
Nicolai,
this.
Nicolai, step up to the plate. We got about a minute here. Let's talk Day of the Dead celebrations at some of the local bars with
I wanted to give some shout outs. Of course, El Chucho's running the Blood and Smoke all week, as well as the Hot Cider. We've got. Serpent in the Apple, sorry, thank you. Trevor Fry at Jack Rose is going to be putting an El Bujo feature on all week.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Aubrey DeBoer at MXDC. She's going to run a special. And can't forget Red Rocks, also in Columbia Heights. Spencer Tannhauser's got a nice drink called the Beetlejuice. He's got a beet juice reduction and some mezcal and some ginger in there. It's got some craziness going on.
All right, and El Bujo,
so a lot of fun.
And local liquor stores.
Yeah, we're pretty good in distribution right now. So throughout D.C. and Maryland, I think we're in about 80 or 90 stores. So you should be able to find us at your local, your favorite local liquor store, wine shop.
It's smoky and smooth. It's really nice.
But
it is smooth.
Not too smoking.
Not too smoky.
Not too
it's
smoky.
Smooth. It's got a little sweetness in the finish. Makes great cocktails. And, yeah.
Well, I think that's part of the issue with mezcals. People automatically think it's going to be
rot
smoky.
Gut. Or too smoky.
Sometimes,
or...
you know, you can just... It attacks your nose right away.
Your olfactory senses.
You know, exactly.
Senses,
thank
yeah.
you. But this one is not like that at all.
No, it's mellow.
It's very cool.
But traditional. Handmade. The Menes family of Santiago Matatlan. You know, traditional.
What's the problem?
That's the perfect segue to me. I'm mellow, but traditional.
You are.
Yeah.
I would not call him mellow.
Unfortunately,
we I'm a lot smoky. We got to wrap up everything you heard about the show today. You can find on the list, areyouonit.com, Nikki's website. It's free to subscribe, and you'll join about 40,000 other Washington area residents who go there to find out what's happening on the food, wine, and restaurant scene. Listen to Nikki today on WTOP 103.5 FM at 12:50 and Thursdays at 12:10 now.
Yes.
I got it.
Okay.
And follow her on Twitter. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
I do, because half the time I don't know where the hell she
is. Exactly. Everybody's going to have a good time. There's so many Day of the Dead, Halloween festivities, harvest festivals, everything going on all week. If you look at the list calendar, there are so many things happening this week. Pumpkin carvings and cocktail specials, you name it. It's all going on all around the city, so you can check that out on the site. Next week's show is going to be equally fabulous. We have famed Mexican chef Margarita Carrillo Arante. She has her new cookbook called Mexico, and it's like literally 3,000 pages. It's so big, and it's filled with Mexican recipes, so I'm really looking forward to talking to her. And Ann Yonkers from Fresh Farm Markets is coming back in.
Oh,
the Farmland Feast is coming back, and we are certainly looking forward to discussing it.
Okay, I think that wraps it up.
All right, we want to thank everybody for joining us in studio today. Thank you, everybody. It's been great having you all in.
More mezcal.
Everybody, please have a delicious week.